Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And welcome to another episode of the Jeffers Brief. I'm John Jeffers, welcoming you to another edition. I know you can't wait. You know, today is the 116th Congress that decided they're going to sit in judgment of President Trump. Okay, fine. This is what you want to do. That's what they're going to do. Let them do it. And we're going to talk a little bit about it because, you know what? They want the attention. Let's give them the attention that most snowflakes so richly deserve and yearn for, shall we? Yes. All right. Before we get started, want to say thank you to Charles in Nebraska for your generous donation. And we got Glock Strong, who's become a patron of this show. Thank you so much. And a Walker in 412. Again, thank you for your support. The rest of you. Now, I know there's a lot more than those three out there. I can see it, you know, on our statistics. However, you know, it'd be great if each one of our listeners would throw in, you know, $2 a month. $2! More would be good if you want to. I'm asking for $2 a month. Come on. I mean, we are on KYAH 540 AM in Utah, and KNAK 1620 in Utah. Terrestrial radio stations. We are going places. I don't know if you heard. I was listening. I was at the gym the other day, and I got on the hamster wheel because I want to burn calories, and I got to get into prepper shape, be prepper fit, and part of that is building up your stamina. So I was doing that, And I was listening to the day before, I listened to Glenn and Shelby Tate on Prepping 2.0. A lot of fun listening to them. They got a lot of good information. As a matter of fact, I highly recommend you go to Contra Radio Network on podbean.com, download it, and listen to the episode where they talk about, oh no, you're not coming to my house. This is how you handle those people who believe in prepping, but they don't want to do it themselves for whatever reason, number of reasons, and how to handle those people. It was a good episode. But anyways, so the last one I listened to Mark Boyle, the prepper guy, the Mark Boyle Show, again on Contra Radio Network, podbean.com. Also can be heard on Saturdays along with Prepping 2.0, Saturdays on KYAH and KNAK. Anyway, so Mark is talking about how socialism is sold as a dream, but the reality is it's a nightmare. And he touched on something that I thought was really interesting, and it got my attention because I'd been thinking about it too. He said, you know, it seems that we're getting tired. The patriots are getting tired of the fight. And I thought, you know what, that's perfect, because, you know, I was feeling that way the last few weeks, thinking, am I making a difference? Are any patriots out there who support the president making a difference? Meanwhile, I'm on the treadmill like a little hamster, you know, or a big hamster, as the case may be, you know, and I'm going. I thought, you know what? Yes, I am making a difference because I am not alone. The mainstream media, the lapdogs of the Democratic Socialist Party, would have me believe that I am alone. I am in the minority. There's not many Trump supporters out there. We've all changed our minds and have seen the light. And I thought, that's just not true. There are more of us than there are of them. Now, am I tired? Yes, we're tired of the fight. Then I thought about, am I really tired of fighting? And I thought about it. And I thought about, good Lord, let me think about this. Let me ask you something. How many of you out there have actually, in the course of your life, How many of you have actually been in a physical fight? A fist fight? How many? My guess is if you're a real American male, you're not a snowflake, you're not offended by every little thing that comes along. You're just a typical red-blooded American male. And you know what? Women, when they were girls, they got into fights too. Guys, if you know, how many of you got into fist fights? I did. I got into a lot. Two were in a classroom. Yes, that's true. Did I win all my fights? No, I did not. Did I win some? Yes, I did. But the thing of it was this. When I thought to myself it was time to fight, that there's no other way, physical altercation must take place and be initiated and engaged upon, I did. I did it. No argument, I did. The last fight I got into in my career was about 4 years ago, and I was 50 years old, and I ended up fighting a 23-year-old. And I got to tell you guys, I mean, did I win that one? That one I won. Did I end up, look, over the course of a lifetime and all the fights I got into, did I end up with bruises, split lips, bloody noses, black eyes? Yes, I did. And I recovered. And I, you know, say to myself, you know, I've got to be smarter about it next time. Well, that, after I'm healed up and feeling pretty good, guess what? Nope, that that went out the window. My point is this. Don't be tired of the fight. Just don't. You don't have to be tired of fighting. The fight is not over until the desired effect is achieved. Now, do I think the Patriots, the conservatives, the Trump supporters are going to lose this fight? My answer is no, and I'll tell you why. Because if you we look at the our adversaries, which would be liberals, socialists, and those fools in Antifa and all their ilk, they only see they'll only go to a fight if they think they've got the numbers and they think they can win. More often than not, and we've seen the video because I post it all the time on Facebook because I do enjoy watching Antifa getting their butts handed to them. I do. I get a sort of a glee about it, a certain glee about it that makes me giggle. It really does. Why? Because you have to sit there and we have to decide what it is that we see when we watch this. But anyways, that's just it. Don't stop fighting. Don't quit. We don't. Yeah, we're all tired of the nonsense. Of course we are. We feel like we're not getting anywhere. Well, the left wants us to feel that way. They want us to feel that way. And you watch these goofs and Antifa and whatnot. Have you ever seen their names? What was that one goofy guy in Ohio who was supposed to be one of the Antifa leaders who's going by Lord Dragon or whatever? It's like, really? We're afraid of somebody named Lord Dragon who's decided to pick up the moniker Lord Dragonfall or whatever. I can't remember his name. But it was Lord something. And he was putting on his little Antifa costume. It's like, this is the future of my country. I fear for it. I do. I fear for it. All right. Let's get back to it. Don't get tired. You're not alone. You are not alone. Now, what else are we going to talk about? Oh. All right. According to Sundance, for those of you who don't know Sundance, the person I look up to for information that's going on behind the scenes. Now, the new rules for the 116th congressional session includes schedule for process of Trump impeachment. Now, this is how dumb this is. They're going to go. They're going to try to impeach Trump. They might get the votes. They might not. It dies when the articles of impeachment dies when it gets to the Senate. Why? Because the lamestream media is extremely partisan, as we already know. They will beat the Democrats who are in charge of Congress horse till that horse dies over and over again. They will not say, oh yeah, well, the Republicans have increased their majority in the Senate, and most of them will not be honest enough to say, it really doesn't matter what Congress does, it will die in the Senate for want of votes. It's very simple. So, they want to do this, do it. All right, so let me tell you about this. This is put out by Sundance yesterday, and I want you to understand something. This is what Sundance is telling us. He says, remember when we warned on November 8th, 2018, that a convergence of left-wing groups, activists, DNC donors, and specifically the lawfare team would align with and meet incoming Democratic leadership to construct a roadmap for the quote-unquote resistance priorities? Well, exactly. That planned and coordinated outcome is visible as incoming Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, presents her new rules for the 116th Congress. Now, keep in mind that Speaker Pelosi has selected former insider DOJ official Douglas Letter to be the chief legal counsel for the House. That becomes important when we get to the part about new powers granted to the House counsel. You follow me so far? Yes? We're good? Yes? Okay. The Pelosi House rules clearly present the outline for an impeachment calendar as directed by changes to the oversight committees. Additionally, there is a myriad of new processes which appear to have been developed through the Lawfare Alliance. Now, here's some of the overview. On page 2, we see a few key points. Pelosi sets up a new, much narrower oversight priority for Chairman Elijah Cummings. Specifically, Elijah, I owe taxes, federal taxes, but nothing happens to me. Specifically, to tailor oversight to the White House and President Donald Trump. Additionally, we see outlined time schedule for hearings. Now, according to the Committee Oversight Plan, subsection 1, we see that finally the Committee on Oversight and Reform, in consultation with House leadership of both parties, is required to submit the oversight plans to the House by April 15th of the first session of a Congress with any recommendation it has for the effective coordination of the oversight plans. There we go. Now, under activity reports, which is subsection 1, it amends the languages in clauses 1D2B and 1D2C of Rule 11, referencing authorization and oversight plans to conform with the changes described in subsection 1, specifically oversight of the Executive Office of the President. Subsection K clarifies the Committee on Oversight and Reform's existing special oversight authority over all operations of government. I wonder where that little beauty was during the last administration when the IRS was targeting conservatives. In subsection K, the clarification is the narrowing of Elijah Cummings' focus, oversight over the Executive Office of the President. This sets up the system for Cummings to target President Trump, his family, and all members of the executive branch as they relate to specific White House functions. The Pelosi rules tell Chairman Cummings to deliver his schedule for his investigations to the House by April 15, 2019. Thereafter, hearing sessions will commence. The objective of those hearings is House impeachment of the President. So now we know the general timeline the Democrats plan to follow. To help achieve that objective, on page 3, Pelosi changes the rules on depositions. Oversight and Reform Committee Depositions, subsection 1, removes the requirement that members be present during counsel-led depositions, returning to the standard of the 111th Congress. Remove certain committee term limits. Subsection M removes term limits for committee chairs as well as members of the Committee on the Budget. Rules of Committee, subsection N, extends the deadline for committees to make their rules available to the public from 30 days to 60 days after the chair's election at the beginning of a Congress. This change is intended to grant committees adequate time to organize, as some committees do not have a full complement of members at the start of a Congress. Why, I don't know. would seem they should be ready to go. In previous oversight hearings, depositions of witnesses could not be conducted by counsel unless minority members were also present. Pelosi removes that rule, allowing an expanded team of House lawyers to question anyone, regardless of whether there's a Republican present, to defend or protect the interests of the witness or target. Now, Speaker Pelosi also removes any term limits on committee chairs. This allows greater political influence and power to the most senior members of the Democratic Party. Most of are what the liberals love to throw at the Republicans, old white guys. Yeah. Additionally, in the event Republicans develop immediate defensive plans to push back against the weaponization of these oversight committees, Pelosi gives her chairs 60 days to make up the rules for their committees so they can deflect any defenses. On page 5, Pelosi removes rules banning headwear on the House floor. This rule change is intended to permit new Muslim members to wear Islamic-compliant hijab head coverings. Subsection X, religious headdress, clarifies and maintains the existing prohibition on wearing hats in the hall of the House, while making express that this prohibition does not include religious headwear. The language for this clarification is modeled on the statutory provision providing for proper decorum during the Pledge of Allegiance, which would be 4th U.S. Code 4. Yes, I know. And removing the supermajority vote, subsection double D, removes the requirement that the House agree by at least a 3/5 supermajority in order to raise revenue through additional federal income tax. The subsection also removes the requirement that for any such measure. Mm-hmm. You know what that what it means is, here comes the tax and spend. So American taxpayers, bend over, here it comes. Again, by the acronym BOHICA, because they're going to keep raising taxes and taxes. Now also, on page 5, House Speaker Pelosi removes the rule requiring a 3/5 majority vote to raise middle-class income taxes. This paves the way for Democrats to raise income taxes by a simple majority vote. So, let me ask you something for all of you out there that think the Democrats are for the small guy. Who really is looking out for your money, for your welfare? They just took away a congressional protection for the middle class. Removed the 3/5 majority so that they can have a simple majority vote and raise your taxes. Following with the investigative plans for impeachment in conjunction with all new powers granted to a massively expanded group of House lawyers with new and expanded powers, page 7 has specific rules to benefit the HPSCA Chairman Adam Schiff. Section 103, separate orders, deposition authority. Subsection A provides the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and each standing committee of the 116th Congress, except for the Committee on Rules, the authority to order the taking of a deposition by a member or counsel of such committee. Members, delegates, and the resident commissioner may participate in all such depositions, but their presence is not required. Depositions taken under this authority are subject to regulations issued by the chair of the Committee on Rules and printed in the congressional record. So Chairman Adam Schiff, old Shifty himself, can now autonomously demand and instruct depositions from anyone at any time for any reason. And the House Intelligence Committee does not need to consider any possible scheduling conflicts for any of the targets or have any Republican members present therein. Schiff granted far more powers than Nunes was. Page 9 is the beginning of a very interesting new power being granted to an expanded office of House Legal Counsel. Legal issues related to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Guess what that is, guys? Mm-hmm. Obamacare. Subsection N authorizes the Speaker on behalf of the House to intervene, otherwise appear, or take any other steps in Texas versus the United States, number 418 CV 001670, North Dakota and Texas, or any other case involving the constitutionality or legality of any provision of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, including provisions ensuring affordable health care coverage for those with pre-existing conditions. So now we have one person, a little tyrette. This is the first part of this Pelosi rule. This part speaks to coordination with lawfare and similar activist groups outside government. The House will now defend Obamacare and all other possible constructs with the legal team, regardless of what the DOJ might be doing on the same legal matter. In essence, a mini legislative DOJ branch that will fight the U.S. Department of Justice if needed. There are two rules on page 10 that are interesting. The first rule allows non-disclosure agreements that no longer have to pass through ethics reviews. This permits House members to force staff to sign NDAs that may or may not be ethically approved. Are you following this? Do you get it, what they've been doing? So under non-disclosure agreements, subsection Q provides that non-disclosure agreements required by offices as a condition of employment for paid or unpaid staff or contractors cannot require notice or approval for employees to communicate with the Committee on Ethics, the Office of Congressional Workplace Rights, or any other office or entity designated by the Committee on House Administration, and that non-disclosure agreements must also provide clear guidance to that effect. Requiring members to pay for discrimination settlements. I wonder if we shouldn't have to pay for sexual harassment claims for settlements. How about that? No, they're not going to touch that one. Subsection R requires a member, delegate, or the resident commissioner to reimburse the Treasury for any settlement of a complaint related to a claim alleging a violation by the member of sections 201A, 206A, or 207 of the Congressional Accountability Act of 1995, which covers discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, which the Equal Opportunity Equal Employment Opportunity Commission recognizes as including sexual orientation and gender identity, national origin, disability, or an employee's service in the uniformed services, and retaliation for claims alleging such discrimination. Now, the second rule on page 10 is Speaker Pelosi rebuking any demand that House members should be forced to pay for sexual harassment settlements by obfuscating the rule to overlay with the 1995 rules with any discrimination. Essentially, Pelosi removes the risk for members surrounding harassment. It's a nice head fake to create the appearance of something that doesn't technically exist. It's a very progressive approach. Page 11 creates a new House Committee for Climate Change. That's 15 members, 2 chairs, 7 Democrats, 6 Republicans. Subsection F establishes a select committee on the climate crisis to investigate, study, make findings, develop recommendations on policy, strategies, and innovations to achieve substantial and permanent reductions in pollution and other activities that contribute to the climate crisis. The Select Committee is authorized to hold hearings and may report to the House or any committee of the results of its investigations and studies, together with any detailed findings and policy recommendations it deems advisable. The subsection requires that it issue all policy recommendations to the relevant standing committees by March 31, 2020, and submit all reports to the House by December 31, 2020. The Speaker is directed to appoint 15 members, delegates, or the resident commissioner, to serve on the Select Committee and to designate one of its members to serve as the chair. 6 of the 15 members must be appointed on the recommendation of the minority leader. Now, the Select Committee will be governed by Rules 10 and 11, except as provided in the subsection. The subsection does not extend subpoena and deposition authority to the Select Committee, but authorizes the Select Committee to submit subpoena and deposition recommendations to the relevant standing committees. Basically, they're a rubber stamp. They say, yeah, we got to talk to these people, but we really can't make you do it, so we'll go there. We'll make somebody else do it. Oh, yeah, okay, bang, and then they do it. Page 13 is the most interesting and ties back to the page number 9 rule. Here, Pelosi sets up an internal House division of lawyers paid with taxpayer funds to defend Obamacare against any adverse action. In essence, Pelosi is setting up her own legislative branch division of justice to fight against the executive branch, U.S. Department of Justice, if needed. Yeah, you heard me. So Title III, Intervention in Litigation Involving the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Title III authorizes the Speaker on behalf of the House to intervene, otherwise appear or take any other steps in the case of Texas versus the United States in any appellate proceedings arising from such case. In addition, Title III authorizes the Speaker in consultation with the bipartisan legal advisory group to intervene, otherwise appear or take any other steps in any other cases involving Obamacare to protect the institutional interest of the House and to defend such act and the amendments made by such act to any provisions of law and any amendments to such provisions, including the provisions ensuring affordable health coverage for those with pre-existing conditions. The title directs the Office of General Counsel of the House of Representatives to represent the House in any such litigation and authorizes the Office of General Counsel to employ the services of outside counsel, including pro bono counsel and other outside experts. The title also requires the chair of the committee or House administration to print in the Congressional Record the aggregate amounts expended on outside counsel and other experts within 30 days of the end of each quarter. The title is included to protect the institutional interests of the House of Representatives in litigation involving Obamacare, given that the Department of Justice has not only refused to defend provisions of the law, but has affirmatively argued that certain provisions of the Act are unconstitutional. The primary issue surrounds defending Obamacare from possible legal removal. However, it doesn't take a deep political thinker to see where this approach ends up. It would be naive to think the lawfare group, Benjamin White's, did not help create this new internal legal system. Normally, traditionally, House counsel represents the interests of the entire legislative branch on any issue that might surface. However, Pelosi is setting up a legal activist agency within the House counsel that will specifically advocate for Democratic priorities against the position of the U.S. Department of Justice and use taxpayer funds to finance the scheme. Pelosi is creating her own mini DOJ inside the legislative branch. Get me? You follow? Huh? If this doesn't irritate you, it should. And with additional investigative powers granted to House committees, we might even see a mini FBI units dispatched to conduct investigations and spy operations accountable only to Speaker Pelosi. Heck, considering Congress already has subpoena power, there's no telling where this might end. Remember, House Democrats have already promised to get rid of Immigration and Customs Enforcement as part of their legislative branch priorities. There's more rules with various levels of consequence. I would suggest you get familiar with them. Contrast against what Republicans would never consider doing and bookmark them for reference later this year when everyone starts asking, well, how is this possible? Huh? This is what we're talking about. This is what is coming. All right. Now, what else? Mitt Romney is a fool. We know that. I'm sorry, Utah. All right. Oh, where'd it go? All right, here we go. Now, Chairman Nadler, Cummings, and Schiff announce immediate round of Trump investigations. Again, this is Sundance reporting. Sundance, I don't know where he gets his information, but he's usually not wrong. Now, Sundance has previously outlined the likely path Democrats will follow when they take control of the key congressional committees starting today. For those who walk through the deep weeds of D.C. politics, the sequence of 2019 events based on accepting the historic resistance pattern is entirely predictable. Now, Fox News has confirmed the intention of Jerry Nadler, House Judiciary, Elijah Cummings, House Oversight, and Shifty, and House Intel, as soon as they are sworn into office. They're about to get subpoena power, and they plan to use it. As Democrats officially take back control of the House when the new Congress is seated today, newly empowered House committee chairmen are preparing to launch a slew of Trump administration investigations. In the press release Wednesday, Cummings said his committee plans to investigate waste, fraud, and abuse of the Trump administration, as well as other issues that affect the American people every day. Yeah, okay, you self-righteous jackass. Get over yourself. Now, there are three important congressional events likely in the first quarter of 2019. The sequencing of these events will be key to understanding the resistance political year. The baseline is that Democrat leadership are cunning political strategists and have likely already drawn out the big picture roadmap with details to be filled in as they proceed. The first event is the congressional use of Michael Cohen for a series of public committee hearings. That goes to oversight, Elijah Cummings, and possibly, though less likely, judiciary, which is Nadler and Intel Schiff. This likely has to happen before March 6, 2019, when Cohen is scheduled to enter federal prison. It's almost certain Cohen's incarceration deferment contains the unwritten agreement to appear. Democrat leadership almost certainly coordinated this plan with Team Mueller and the Southern District of New York some time ago. You follow this? This is what's going on. Second event is the release of Team Mueller political report, which, despite its inability to find criminal wrongdoing, will most certainly be written with highly charged innuendo as damaging to President Trump as possible. The release of this report will absolutely fuel several public committee hearings. Oversight and Reform, Cummings, Intel, Schiff, and Judiciary, Nadler, without any doubt. The third event is the release of the OIG Horowitz report on possible FISA abuse. Due to the nature of Mueller's proprietary investigative blackout, Horowitz is not allowed to see any investigative material or witnesses with Mueller probe ongoing. The Horowitz report will likely come out after Mueller. That's the three key events the Democrats and media will most likely use to exploit for maximum political benefit in the first quarter of 2019. The sequence between Mueller and Horowitz might reverse, though unlikely. Other investigative resistance paths will spur from these three primary first quarter events. Again, there is very little doubt the approach has already been mapped out in post-election meetings between Pelosi, Schumer, and Democratic heads. Allies in the lawfare community, political allies inside the executive branch, along with feedback from political networks and DNC Perez and major resistance donors. The real trick to discovering the plan as early as possible will be to spot the signals that will tell us where they are going before they shift their planned direction. For example, we already know Michael Cohen is a key starting point for the aforementioned reasons. To better understand the resistance landscape, next, let's look at 1, the most reasonable predictions for committee structure, 2, the new gain of 8 lineup, and 3, the broad political alliance that are also predictable. For key committee structure, the House Permit Select Committee on Intel will likely be Chairman Adam Schiff and Ranking Member Devin Nunes. The House Judiciary Committee will be chaired by Jerry Nadler and Ranking Member Doug Collins. The House Oversight and Reform Committee will be Chairman Elijah Cummings and Ranking Member Jim Jordan. The Gain of Eight, which is the Intel Oversight. The Go Eight lineup will be radically different in 2019 and far more adversarial to the executive branch, ranked by influence over at the Intel. You got Pelosi, Schiff, Mitch McConnell, Senator Richard Burr, Kevin McCarthy, Chuckie Schumer, Devin Nunes, and Mark Warner. The broad political alliance overlaying the D.C. political alliances within the Intel community, Gain of Eight, you see a resistance ratio of 7-1 against the executive branch. Pelosi, Schiff, McConnell, Burr, McCarthy, Schumer, and Warner all allied with the overall uniparty resistance objective, and only Devin Nunes as an ally to the White House. That's a ratio of 7-1 in favor of the D.C. resistance against the executive branch. That's the landscape. That's the way it is. This is pathetic. So, if we take the first quarter resistance events narratives, Cohen appearance, 2, Mueller report, 3, Horowitz report, and we overlay what has already surfaced, we can then begin to get a picture of how things will reasonably be expected to be played out. Now, Special Counsel Mueller, the team, not the person, and DOJ Rod Rosenstein have already explained to POTUS Trump that if he attempts any declassification of documents currently part of Mueller's investigative purview, that's literally everything or anything they lay claim to, the special counsel investigative unit will consider that interference with their investigation of him, President Trump. That threat and the advice of White House lawyers, prior counsel no longer present, led to Trump backing down in September. In other words, it's Trump has not pulled the trigger by now, it's too late. It's done. So, it stands to reason if Rosenstein and Mueller, etc., are telling the president he can't take any action, common sense says the same general hands-off principle would apply to DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who is ultimately under much more of the institutional DOJ control system than President Trump. See the issue? Get it? So as time progresses, and with hindsight as a corruption guide, it becomes more clear how Mueller has been playing his cards. Horowitz is frozen in place by the inability to see evidence until Mueller says he's finished with his investigation. While it is absolutely blood-boiling to witness that professional DOJ hoodwinking, the incoherent Catch-22 is the administrative state doing some of its finest work. See the scale of it? There's no one to technically hold accountable. It's the system self-actuated. This is an example of why you can never be cynical enough when it comes to Washington, D.C. Now, the Democrats take control today, January 3rd. They will likely utilize the first 2 weeks of compliant media coverage to spike the football and position maximum demoralization toward their new minority party Republican colleagues. The Democrats will have to balance the level of smug condescension, which the media and their base are looking forward to, with their visible fox apoplexy toward the concurrent appropriations battle and government shutdown. They will pat the Republicans on the head and position themselves as the professionals in charge now. If we extend the sequencing with all the above in mind, it looks like the House Oversight Committee Cummings, House Judiciary Committee Nadler, will likely kick the resistance operation into effect after Super Bowl, with Michael Cohen's scheduled appearances broadcast on television for the better part of 2 weeks. Yeah, you heard me, 2 weeks. This is pathetic. The first phase event will likely be followed by a late February, early March dropping of the Mueller report. There will be a grand lead-in, rollout, and press spectacle designed for maximum exposure. The tail end of that phase will lead to more hearings throughout March, perhaps into early April, with subpoenas based on the report framework. Again, remember, these are Democrats. This stuff is already planned out in the broad strokes. The upcoming congressional calendar has all these events considered. Pelosi and Schumer have told their key underlings of preliminary vacation blackout dates, etc. Nothing professional Democrats do is without specific intent, purposeful design, and well-communicated organization. This is what they do. This is all they do. You get it? While these events are happening, the Intel Committee will be demanding discovery from the White House and the intelligence apparatus that will be spurred by Cohen and Mueller. The DOJ and FBI will find a new interest in congressional compliance, especially given the House General Counsel Douglas Leiter is one of their allied resistance members. On the positive side for Team Trump, once Mueller actually presents a report, his operational leverage over the White House will be effectively over. Mueller, the team, not the individual, will be handing the resistance baton to their allies in Congress, and the team will then set off for a well-indulged, stunningly compensated media tour, which will likely include numerous advance offers from Hollywood types for movie rights. Most of them will enjoy job offers from major networks and political allies. There it is. It's laid out. Do you like what you see? Do you like what you hear? This is what happens when you stall, and the deep state stalls and stalls and stalls. You know, if it was up to me, and I were advising Trump, I would release the information, declassify it, and take that weapon out. He waited too long to do it. Too long. He got bad advice from somebody. And now the price is going to be paid. He could have taken out, by declassifying the FISA warrants and all that, could have taken out a bunch of these weapons and left these clowns holding nothing but air in their hands. But they waited too long, and now we're going to pay the price. That's okay. We can handle it. As POTUS supporters, as conservatives, our shoulders are big enough to handle it. We are. And my guess is we'll be seeing a rise in Antifa and their antics. Yeah, we're going to see it. So what we're going to do? We'll fight back. We'll fight back. And we got to fight hard. And don't let people forget. Don't let people forget the kind of crap that's going on now that we're going to see in the next year. Because it's going to start rolling. Because the presidential season will be upon us probably June or July 2019. You'll start seeing people. In fact, you already saw one. Never mind. We're going to fire something else. So let's talk about something else, shall we? I'm going crazy here. How much time have I got left? I gotta check my thing here. Yeah, I got time. Who is this? From the American Spectator, Dov Fisher. This is what we have in store for 2019. Happy New Year. This is good. I wanted to share it with you. The politicians always begin every argument, every TV and radio interview, every speech with the same lie. The American people are too smart to halt the press's reality time. No, they are not. The American people chose to be led by Obama for a wasted decade. Too smart? Yeah, by half. Frankly, immediately before the Obama wasted decade, the American people narrowed down the choices from among some 200 million possibilities to George W. Bush and John Kerry with Papa John Edwards in the wings. In other words, we American people are a good people, a compassionate people, a pretty tolerant and oft times too tolerant people. But a people who are too smart? Well, maybe. But only if we compare Americans to everyone else out there. Venezuelans, the French, denizens of all the other continents where life has been detected, though not necessarily intelligent life. So we enter the year 2019, Anno Domini, for example, also known as the second half of the year 5779 since creation's first week. And the American people, a club of which we are all proud to be members, at least in terms of compassion and when comparing to everyone else in NATO, because it only gets worse after that, and Turkey is pretty bad too, have bestowed our nation a new government to be conducted in tandem by 1. Donald J. Trump as chief executive and commander-in-chief, 2. Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, whom Democrats swore not to elect, and 3. Chuck Schumer as Nancy's houseboy and caddy. This is what we have in store for 2019. Happy New Year! Call it war games, because 2019 really is going to be about playing games, not legislating, not leading. It'll be about speechifying great values, freedom, liberty, health, fairness of all, truth, justice, and the American way. Now, no one ever defines what exactly is meant by the American way. Herein the secret. The American way will be about spending tens of millions of your dollars, your money and mine, to investigate Trump, while North Korea and Iran race to see who can build their ICBM nukes faster and better, aimed at the Washington obelisk in D.C., and the almost identical Jefferson Davis obelisk in Hobsonville. Adam Schiff will be investigating Trump. Nadler will be investigating Trump. Maxine Waters will be investigating Trump. Ocasio-Cortez will still be investigating why she can't find the House of Representatives after landing in Seattle's SeaTac Airport. After all, it's Washington, isn't it? While Mahmoud Abbas and his Palestinian Authority throw American citizens into prison for life sentences with hard labor on charges of attempting to sell a home to a Jew, the House Democrats will be demanding Trump's taxes, while Putin consolidates power wherever he can, and while the Chinese keep cheating in international trade and hacking our national defenses. The House Democrats will want to know who has stayed at Trump's D.C. hotel. It'll be that kind of year. Investigate Ivanka, investigate Kushner, investigate Barron. The American way will see Democrats who want a strong border and wall barrier for years now engaged in the new war games, refusing to allow meaningful border defenses in the future. Yes, it is a hypocritical turnaround, but it is also logical and sensible. They just cannot say aloud why they have changed positions. The earlier position years ago was based on concern for lower-income workers, disproportionately black and Latino, but also white, who get destroyed financially by the stream of illegal cheap labor. Tsunamis of illegals crossing our southern border flood the labor market for years, driving down below subsistence wages that were being paid to lower economic classes of bona fide citizens and taking jobs away from many of them. The Democrats cared about that because they then saw their electoral base as including lower income workers. However, over time, and the electoral transmorphization of Republican Nixon, Reagan, California deserves much of the credit. The Democrats have come to see that a porous border guarantees them elected superiority in a country whose legal citizens otherwise have abandoned them. The baby boomers who came of revolutionary age on the campuses of the 1960s now are the seniors who vote Republican. Seniors has always been a lock for Democrats, promising to protect their Social Security and Medicare from Romney-like Wall Street Republicans who would tear it all down for corporate profits. But today's seniors back Republicans because the GOP will protect those benefits paid through a lifetime of wage deductions, and they know that the Democrats will kill all of it with a single-payer socialized medicine, will kill their fixed pensions with runaway inflation, and ultimately will kill them with everything from money-saving Obamacare death panels to sanctuary cities that allow time-tested murderers the freedom to roam and murder the defenseless. Women were a Democratic lock, but now Caucasian mothers are gone. The Dixie South was a Democrat lock, but now it has gone Republican. Ethnic Catholics, Orthodox Jews, blue-collar workers in the Midwest Rust Belt, all gone Republican. Sooner or later, Asian Americans will be solidly Republicans as soon as they draw the inferences from the Harvard lawsuit. That is why the Democrats need open borders to import and harvest new voters by the millions, enough to turn swing states, and will not give the president his or our wall. The American way is itself a war game, so the Democrats will not fess up regarding why they have changed playing pieces. Instead, they will speak of caring about border security and about all the other better ways to guard the border. They will drone on about fences and probably will fence drones, you know, all the things they've been working so well until now. If you ever doubt their dishonesty, thinking just for a Diogenes moment, hey, I think this Democrat is honest, just ask yourself, if Pelosi and Schiff really mean it when they talk about their passion for protecting the border, then why did they play such a direct role in advancing California as a sanctuary state? And that's all you need to remember about that. The war games will extend to health care. This country has the greatest health care system in the world, the greatest research and development. How many people have you ever met who fly to other countries for standard surgical procedures? A silver medal goes to Israel, which keeps coming out with the stuff that rapidly becomes American standard of care. The CT scan, the Bravo for GERD, just an amazing litany. However, our system by which we individuals pay for our health care system is quirky. The result, as always happens, from trying to get around not smart tax laws and repressive governmental regulation. So back in the 1940s, as people came home from World War II, the government instituted wage and price controls as a left liberal concoction to avoiding post-war inflation. As a result, because every government effort exerting control or suppression inevitably generates a private sector scheme to get around it, employers came up with a gimmick for raising salaries anyway, but without getting fined. The scheme, they started throwing health coverage as a perk. That way, they could compete for good workers by secretly giving the employees more bucks, effectively raising wages without breaking the law, and the companies even got tax breaks for doing so. Even better, the coverage is also tax-free for the worker. Win-win, right? These tax games always catch up with the players, and now the system of health insurance is so inextricably tied in with employment benefits, even though the need now is so anachronistic, that people often find themselves locked into terrible jobs where they hate their bosses and workplace, in the fields where they often know they cannot even excel. But they fear leaving for somewhere better, a better boss, a better field, somewhere to which they are better oriented, or even start their own business because they might lose health care coverage. Amplifying the situation is the precondition. On the one hand, there is little room to sympathize with the gambler who goes years without health coverage, betting he will not get severely sick, and then tragically gets an unforeseen severe diagnosis and now comes demanding health coverage. It is like a person without life insurance getting whacked by the mob and just before expiring, expecting a company to write him a $10 million life insurance policy. Or seeing his house on fire and demand that his broker rapidly write him a $1 million fire insurance policy before the last window frame incinerates. Nonetheless, other people are not gamblers. There are countless fair players in America who properly have been insured all along, but who thereafter get a severe health diagnosis and finally, suddenly find themselves locked in the future because they now, going forward, have a pre-existing condition. This matter should be addressed and resolved. It really can't be, but it probably won't. The Democrats will not want President Trump to campaign on having solved the problem. Republicans will not want to give it to the Democrats. Instead, it'll be a war game. Each side will go on TV and wax poetic over fixing healthcare, and no one will until every member of the both houses of Congress and their staffs get removed from the platinum government healthcare plans and get put into the same plans that Starbucks offers its baristas. That's all it would take. And the extra great thing about the Starbucks plan is that, as of 2019, everyone gets unlimited visits to the restroom, even without having to buy sustainable coffee beans first or having to be educated as the barista explains social justice. So it'll all be war games, immigration, border control, health care, whatever else we'd really need to have addressed, because the American people, who are too smart to have it any other way, freely have been chosen to be led by a troika of Mr. Trump, Ms. Pelosi, and Chucky, an incredible manifestation of national electoral brilliance coruscating in the sunlight. As in so many games, there is always a joker. In Monopoly, it is called go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. In Wheel of Fortune, it is bankrupt. In football, it is called Kaepernick. In the Year of War games, it will be the Mueller investigation. Will it end a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years? My guess, and it's only a guess, that it ends at the 2020 Democratic Convention when, amid 45 known declared candidates and three illegals missing from San Francisco seeking sanctuary from ICE by vying for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination, the convention breaks a deadlock in the 37th round by nominating a ticket of Robert Mueller for president and Hillary Rodham for vice president. With the latter's surname alteration, she also avoids being tagged a three-time loser while expressing gender fluidity, and the Rodham empowers her to avoid being asked all those snarly questions about Monica. So, bad as they augur, the war games of 2019 might not be as bad as the 2020 vision thing. Want an alternative? How about a nice game of chess? Right or wrong? I don't know. Is he right? I think he's pretty good. I think Sundance was good on his. But if you don't know it, you can't react to it. Now you know it. Now you know what to look for, what to ask for. Let's see. Got about 6 minutes left. You know what I want to do? I haven't done it, but I'm going to do it now. It's time for the Jeffers Brief to talk about, you guessed it, it's time for social justice. Yes, it's time for social justice here on the Jeffers Brief, where we look to see what our little national snowflakes are all up in arms about this week. Well, there's a study that finds radical underrepresentation for women in Hollywood. A feminist professor says Betsy DeVos Title IX guidelines benefit survivors.
Oh.
And the Ohio Wesleyan University offers social justice major with required activism component. Now, where are you going to get a job? Oh, I got a degree in social justice, but I can't get a job. That's because you're a moron, and you shouldn't. In fact, if my daughter had done that, I would say you're paying for all the college by yourself. Don't even ask me for a penny. I mean, she didn't do that. She actually got a job and a degree 3 weeks ago, where she graduated from DePaul University Business School with a degree in logistics and business operations. So, if you got those, get a hold of me. My daughter's looking for an interesting job. All right, what else we got? The Democrats have inserted language to expand abortion into the bill to end shutdown. Is anybody surprised by that? They're going to give more of our money to these idiots. Oh, and the leading cause of death in the United States is abortion. That's like 41 million dead. But we don't talk about that. Georgetown University plans action against microaggressors. They're implementing a new plan to combat microaggressions by training students and staff how they can take action whenever they come across a microaggressor. Oh, idiots. Oklahoma State faculty official, the Black Spider-Man isn't prominent enough in the Spider-Verse film. I would say Oklahoma State needs to fire that fool, because if that's all he's got, they're wasting their money. It could be better spent on somebody that can actually educate the students. A court has dismissed lawsuit from potential law student who refused to take the LSAT. That's right. I don't want to take the LSAT legal entrance exam. Well, good. You don't have to take it, but you don't get to go to law school either, fool. All right. Of course, we've talked about 11 incoming Democrats who cannot wait to kick some Trump butt. When the 116th Congress convenes today, many of the newly elected members are bringing an anti-Trump agenda and the goal of fundamentally transforming America even farther to the left than Barack Obama tried to accomplish in his 8 years in office. Okay. A biological male transgender prisoner was moved to a women's facility. Yeah. You all see the picture. He's smiling. Oh, what do we got? A biological male transgender prisoner has been transferred to a women's prison facility after complaints he felt like a quote-unquote sex slave while an inmate in the men's prison across Illinois. That's like complaining that you're an orphan after you kill your parents. Oh, what else we got here? Transgender activist pushing hard for a trans James Bond. Please. Enough. A survey has Kevin Hart's consumer approval intact despite the Oscar ouster. You know what? Who cares? It's the Oscars. That's why his consumer approval's intact. No one cares about the Oscars. Only the Hollywood leftist clowns do. Universities have introduced hundreds of free online courses in 2018. What else we got here? In the Newspeak dictionary, the European Union Parliament warns against words like mankind and manpower. They have issued politically correct guidance using words like mankind and man-made in order to infuse its everyday language with social justice. Aww. Feminist Amy Susskind tries to get a professor fired for disagreeing with her. Trying to get the progressive radio show host David Pakman fired from his adjunct professorship at Boston College after he dared to disagree with her social justice politics on Twitter. Oh, they can't handle that, can we? All right. Let's see. The University of Cincinnati pays $47,000 to a student deprived of due process rights. He received the $47,000 settlement as a result of the university's failure to allow him to defend himself against sexual assault accusations. Good. Mizzou officials tell tall men asking out short women is sexual misconduct. Don't ask me how that works, but then again, here we are. All right. Shoot, we got maybe one for us. Let's see what I say. Montana State University faces lawsuit for punishing views on transgender lifestyles. You heard it. You know it. And that will do it for us here on the social justice front. So there you have it. Yeah, that will do it. For here, I'm John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief, thanking you for listening to us. If you missed this, go to ContraRadioNetwork.podbean.com. You can download it there. And until next time, keep up the good fight. Don't stop. You're not alone.